Welcome back, everybody. This is Eric and Matt, and this is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, your beacon of freedom and the American way of life. Tune in every Friday for a new episode as we dive into the world of liberty and what makes our country great. All right, we are diving into another flight. And generally, when we're recording podcasts, we like to end the day on a nice note and take part in some really wonderful libations.
That's right.
All right. In today's podcast, we are going to be diving into the world of German beers. And, you know, we've got some tasting notes and things like that. But what I basically did was went up to my local liquor store and I just grabbed, you know, five beers that I thought would be really cool. So we're going to be diving into them. Some of them are really common. You're probably used to hearing names like Beck's and things like that being thrown out there. And then we're going to get into some of the, you know, maybe obscure brands that some of you may not be, you know, used to hearing from. All of the breweries that we are mentioning here in this particular podcast are all very old and established breweries from Bavaria. All right. Before we get too far in today's episode, I'd like to give a thanks to the show's patron sponsor, and it is WeTheProcessor.com. They are a staunchly pro-freedom and pro-2A card processor. No monthly fees, low rates. You don't ever have to worry about being terminated or canceled by your current processor for what you sell. You know, sell what you want, when you want, to who you want. Really, you know, good credit card processor, good group of people.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of folks are being censored and everything like that, and a lot of folks are being canceled and having issues with their credit card processors. So if you want a pro-2A, pro-conservative credit card processor, check them out at WeTheProcessor.com.
That's right.
Go over there and sign up and look into that, all right? The Germans definitely know their way around beer. And this is the first beer flight that we've done. And I think in future episodes, we are going to try to focus in on beer as it originates from certain countries. Then we can start breaking down beers into flights based on different characteristics of the beer, how it's made. So this particular flight is going to focus mainly just on beers that are simply the only criteria is it needs to be from Germany. So that's what we're looking at here. We're going to go ahead and start getting into this a bit. Are you much of a beer guy, Matt?
I have a love and hate relationship with beer. I love beer, but beer hates me. Meaning, I will consume all the beer that is in front of me, but it has a way of making my body expand in ways that I don't like. So it is a love and hate relationship, meaning if I drink, you know, and there has to be good beers, like obviously like Michelob Ultra and like all of these light beers, they're low on calories and low on carbs, but they're also kind of low on flavor. And you can try to, you know, fool yourself into enjoying that type of beer, but a real quality beer, high calorie content, high carbs, traditional beer is hard to beat. And the Germans did it right. I mean, they are probably, if not the originators of beer, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, I'm sure you'll be able to correct me on this. It was like monks that accidentally discovered beer when they had their backpacks with wheat or barley or whatnot, and it got rainwater on it, and then it kind of fermented and turned into beer accidentally. But the beer flight that we're doing today, I am looking forward to. I love dark beer. It is my vice. And every time that I try to eat healthy, I'm like, oh, man, this is it. I'm gonna eat healthy and I'm gonna drink healthy and open the fridge and I see that dark, dark libation in there. Gotta drink it.
Man, I'm telling you, and German beers to me really represent some of the world's best beers. They are just so, you know, big bodied and they got bold flavor. And when you think about beer, you know, it's easy to kind of get trapped in like the Budweiser or, you know, some, you know, low alcohol content beer or whatever. Germany's beers are generally brewed for flavor and not so much for alcohol content. So when you get into the really massive flavors and the big bold profiles in the beer, you also generally get a higher alcohol content as a result. So I would like to bring up something that would be interesting to talk about here, and that's Germany's beer purity law, which is over 500 years old. We'll talk about that. And I'm just going to kind of paraphrase this website here on NPR that I've got. So with other, let's see, with more than 1,300 breweries producing some 5,500 different types of beer, Germany is serious about the amber nectar. There's even a word for it. Well, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. And guys, I hope you'll understand. I'm going to definitely screw up some of these pronunciations of these German words. Biernerst, which means deadly serious, and translate literally as beer serious. This sober attitude applies particularly to the German beer purity law known as the Reinheitsgebot. I can't even begin to pronounce that. And I'm very sorry. I do not speak German, so please bear with me. I do not know how to pronounce these words. But introduced in 1516 by Duke Wilhelm IV of Bavaria, the decree allows for only hops, barley, water, and later yeast in every stein. For 500 years, this recipe has served Bavaria very well, and for the last century, the rest of Germany. Let's see. German beer is not as good as it was 20 years ago. Brands of beer have the same taste or nearly the same taste, and good beers with awards now are not from Germany and there are from America or somewhere else. So basically, in this article, they are proving or trying to prove the fact that while the German purity law is a time-honored tradition, the award-winning beers that we have nowadays are generally not even coming out of Germany anymore, which is a tall statement because most of these classic old-school brands are so delicious and they've held on for so long, maybe not even out of the name of tradition, but out of the name of flavor and taste, right? So that's what we have to not only assume, but certainly surmise here that German beers have a staple in modern culture, pop culture, just general society, right? People generally associate the Germans with good beer.
This is true. And that's exactly how I envision it. I mean, when you think German, you think like Das Boot, like this big boot of beer and Oktoberfest. In Georgia here, we're extremely fortunate to have a town called Helen, Georgia, which is up in the mountains, North Georgia mountains. Heavy, heavy, heavy German population. It is basically a German town that has been moved into the mountains of Georgia. And every year they have an Oktoberfest. It is somewhat of a staple within the community. And you can drive up to Helen, Georgia, and it literally, if you guys have never had the opportunity to go there and you live close by, whether you're in Tennessee or South Carolina or Alabama, check out Helen, Georgia Oktoberfest. And it's like you're transported not only in time, but in location. So this town is in on it. They play the part. They dress up, you go into the bars. This is how they make their living. And you'll walk into a small German pub and they are 100% committed to this environment. So the waitresses are wearing like the German outfits and they're like singing, and you see guys like the German guys like swinging their drinks and singing. It's amazing. I cannot tell you how good of a time it is.
Yeah, the decor of the buildings, the architecture, yes. Everything is very much inspired by Germany, and it is such a cool thing to check out. And, you know, whether you live in Georgia or not, Helen is definitely worth the trip. I've been there several times myself. I love it, and I strongly recommend if you visit Helen, Georgia, you've got to check out Charlemagne's Kingdom. It's really, really neat. It's this big diorama that he created of this Bavarian mountain scene, and there's all the little moving figurines and stuff. It is totally worth it. It's like $10 to go in. The kids will love it. And there's a great tavern right there. You can get tons of great beer and schnitzel and tons of awesome things. So definitely worth the look. Helen, Georgia is one of my absolute favorite places to visit.
But it's like stepping into a small town in Germany, and especially during Oktoberfest, it blows me away. The first time I went, I was blown away. If you're going to go, you need to book quick because they don't have a lot of hotels, surprisingly. And the hotels there are really small mom and pop hotels, and they are quite expensive during that time because they know there's not a lot of options.
It's also worth looking into the hot air balloon rides and things that they do in the area as well. I personally have never been in a hot air balloon, but it looks like a ton of fun. That whole area is just teeming with German influence, and it's so awesome. So if you're in the States and you ever want to visit the closest thing to a German Bavarian village you can possibly get your hands on, Helen, Georgia is definitely worth a look. I'd like to quickly, before we get into our first beer in the flight, I'd like to just mention sort of like the German purity law and all of that, the brewing laws, and as it has to do with marketing, right? So there's this extremely distinctive distinction, I guess, if you will, that's made when it comes to, you know, beers that are brewed in accordance with the German purity laws. They make a big deal about it, right? So it seems like that's sort of the threshold that you have to meet. And it's like, oh, well, you're not a German beer maker unless you brew your beer in accordance with the German purity laws. Many would say that the modern purity laws probably are a little bit antiquated by today's standards, especially when, you know, using some slightly different methods, you can make some really great beer, many beers that have won awards over the German counterparts. But in today's flight, we are going to get into some great beers, and we're going to start out with probably the first German beer that I ever had. Okay, and that was Beck's. Beck's is a Pilsner. All right, and it's imported out of St. Louis, Missouri, here in Georgia by Anheuser-Busch, but it is a German brand. It was introduced in 1873 in Bremen, Germany, okay? It's considered a high-end European import, a premium German Pilsner. It is golden in color. Beck's is a classic German Pilsner with a robust, distinctive, full-bodied taste, a fresh, hoppy bouquet with a fresh full head. Brewed in Bremen, Germany, Beck's is made in accordance with the Germany purity law 1516. It is brewed using only top quality barley, hand selected hops from the Bavarian Hallertau region. I hope I said that right. Fresh glacier water and Beck's exclusive strain of yeast that's been cultured and cultivated for generations. Beck's contains 5% alcohol by volume. So I'll pause right there. I'm going to go ahead. And now we are drinking out of a pair of beer steins. Now these are ale horns, actually. They're not steins. The Germans typically will drink from beer steins, which are like a ceramic drinking vessel with a computer or silver lid. I do have some steins, but I thought we'd drink out of some ale horns. And these are actually ale horns that were produced by alehorn.com. And these are Game of Thrones commemorative ale horns that were customized for Brandy and I. We're big Game of Thrones fans. And we thought it would be very Viking-like to have our beer today out of an ale horn. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and pour this up. The bottle has a beautiful green color. It's kind of a baby puke green. Red, silver, and black logo. Very simple packaging. Okay. Many people consider Beck's to be the Budweiser of German beer. I'm going to go ahead and pour half a beer in my mug.
So on top of Helen being a fairly large German population here in Georgia, my family recently went to Huntsville, Alabama, to visit the Space Museum, U.S. Space Museum. And I had no idea. I mean, yes, there's history that shows that the U.S. imported a whole bunch of Germans during the end of World War II to advance the rocket program, but they were imported to Huntsville, Alabama. So apparently, when you go to Huntsville, it's all German. Restaurants, huge German influence. Amazing. If you haven't gone, check it out.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and give this Bex a smell.
Smells very crisp. Smells like a Pilsner.
It does smell like a Pilsner. It smells like a very adult Budweiser.
Yes.
It has a, you know, when you think about the smell of beer, Beck smells like beer. It has a very, very, it's a very pungent smell. Not in a negative way, but it is pungent.
Well, when you think about the way that it smells like pretty much what I grew up smelling with my parents, with it being Budweiser or Coors, because those are Pilsners as well. So it smells like a Pilsner. So when I smell that, you know, it smells like the type of beer that your mom or dad would be drinking as you were growing up. I know it sounds horrible, but it's not horrible because they used to smoke around me too, but it happens. But that's the way it smells.
Let's give it a taste.
Yes.
All right. This is Bex.
Very crisp.
Mm.
It definitely helps that it's ice cold. So that makes it taste even better.
Worth noting. Okay. If you go into Germany and you order a beer, chances are it's going to be room temperature or slightly cooler than room temperature. So that the thing is like there's a big difference between the way Americans drink beer and the way that the Germans drink beer. We tend to like our beers very cold, whereby, you know, over in Europe, maybe not so much. And the same thing goes with sodas. If you order a Coke or some type of a soda in England, perhaps, you know, UK, it may not necessarily be cold unless you request it that way. Whereby here, you know, if you didn't get a drink with ice in it, you'd be like, what the heck? You know, I want my drink cold.
That's right. I feel like such a savage drinking out of this thing. It's it's quite the experience.
It's really, really good. So I'm going to move on to some tasting notes here off the website. All right. And it says here, how to serve. All right. The round malt character and balanced but robust hop bitterness of Bex makes the beer a perfect accompaniment to sushi. Cutting through fatty tuna or salmon and refreshing the palate after a blast of wasabi. It's also a wonderful addition alongside German fare such as bratwurst or Wiener Schnitzel or whatever, any of that type of stuff.
I could see that. It does have some citrusy, hoppy. And I guess when I associate hops, I would think that it has some citrus characteristics of cutting through any type of like fats or oils, something like sushi if you're eating like a real fatty tuna. Or something like that. It definitely has the ability to kind of cut through.
Almost in the way that, like, you know, ginger is meant to clear your palate.
Right.
It does the same type of thing. The floral arrangement in it and the crispness of it,
mm-hmm.
It tends to just sort of wash your palate off, you know, a little bit. So it definitely has that vibe to it.
I enjoy a Pilsner. I think that every beer has its place. So when I'm thinking a Pilsner, I'm thinking like a hot Budweiser, but like a hot sunny day by the pool and you want a really ice cold, crisp Pilsner. This is definitely better than Budweiser, to be honest. It's better than a lot of beers on the Pilsner front. It's definitely a premium product, as they stated. You can tell they're using premium products. Hops are great. It has a very good, crisp flavor. It's a very pungent, very high-end Pilsner beer. We're not talking like a Coors Banquet or a Miller High Life or anything like that, which the champagne and beers, I'm not shaking any sticks at because that's my favorite beer on the domestic front.
And they are very refreshing.
Oh, yes.
Fair.
And you can buy it by the pallet. They are quite inexpensive. But I'm definitely more of a dark beer kind of guy. But you're not going to drink a dark beer sitting by the pool at 100 degree weather. It's just not my ideal situation for that.
I hear you. It's a very full-bodied beer, despite being refreshing, which you would think that in the world of beer, that you generally would not have a very full-bodied and big-tasting beer also be very light and refreshing. So Beck's definitely marries those two components quite well. I would like to add a few facts here from the website before we move on to the next flight. And plus, I've got some more to drink. We have quite a bit of beer here to drink, boys and girls.
Quite a bit.
All right. In 1873, three entrepreneurs from Bremen, Germany, shared a vision for creating exceptional beer only from the finest ingredients. Luther Ruttenberg, a successful builder, chose an unfamiliar path into brewing beer. He hired businessman Thomas May to keep things in order and Heinrich Beck, the best brewer he knew, to help guarantee the success. The Beck's recipe has not changed and is still made with the same unique ingredients. Since 1876, every bottle of Beck's beer proudly has printed the key of Bremen on its label with the bit facing right. A little bit of a factoid there for you when it involves the Beck's beer. And Beck's is the first beer that I was ever introduced to that I kind of knew was a German beer. And I recall being quite impressed with it. I think my first Beck's beer I actually did have in Hohenfels in Germany.
Nice.
At room temperature.
Nice.
And I recall really enjoying it.
Well, you know, my first experience, I think we stopped in, Ireland on the way to Iraq. Did we not? Was that Ireland or was it Germany that we stopped at? I believe it was Ireland, which is, and I remember coming off of the plane into the terminal, and there was the guy selling Guinness right in front of the terminal because we were all coming off of the chartered flight because we were going to Kuwait. And if my memory serves me correctly, that terminal was shut down because U.S. troops were coming in, and there was literally one booth open, and it was the Guinness booth. And he literally was ready. He knew. Like, it was an inside job, man. He knew we were coming. He had Guinness steins out. They were all full. Like, it had to have been probably like 50 of them. And they were already full, resting. But he knew what he was doing. So he had poured the Guinness out. They were rested. So everything was perfect. And he was just waiting for the troops to come off of the catwalk to get their Guinness and then get back on the plane.
He knew what was happening.
He knew what was going on. But that was my first experience having like a Guinness in Ireland. It was pretty cool.
We're going to get into our next beer in this particular flight. This is a Spaten Optimor.
Oh, you poured it already.
And
nice.
It is a double bock. All right.
Oh, yeah.
This classic dark beer, German dark beer, bottom fermented double bock. The flavor profile is full body with a deep dark color and a rich roasted malt flavor. 7.2% alcohol by volume, so definitely not a lightweight of a beer. Let's see. The northernmost wine producing county in Europe, Germany's cool climates are most suitable for white grapes. The best vineyards are suited along rivers such as the Rhine and the Mosel, which temper the extremes of weather and help the grapes ripen. German wines, this is more of the region that comes from. I want to know more about this individual beer. I am going to try my best here.
So I know Eric, while he's looking that up, Eric, I'm just going to let him know what a double bock is. So you have a bock, which is a heavy-bodied, bittersweet lager, and then you have a double bock, which the exact definition is, and I quote, a very strong, very full-bodied beer. So the difference between a bock and a double bock is the word very.
So on the bottle, it actually mentions that it's a malt liquor. It's a beautiful green bottle with a gold, black, and green label. Looks like there's a couple of shovel heads here on this particular bottle. Established in 1397, Munich, Germany. Brewed in Munich, Germany. You know, a very sedate and average packaging you expect it to be. You know, light green bottle. All right. And so before we have a taste here, in 1397, the Weisser Brew was alluded to for the first time in Munich. The ownership changed often until 1854, when the brewery moved to the location that it still uses today. In 1867, it became the largest brewery in town, and in 1909, it began to deliver beer to North America. In 1922, the Spaten factory united to form a joint stock company. In 1924, the advertising slogan, Lass der Reiten trinke Spaten, literally translates to, let yourself be advised, drink Spaten, was invented. I'm sorry that my German pronunciation is very terrible, and I know you guys are going to give me crap for it, but I don't care. Now, let's see. It is still in use today. The brewery reached the production of 1 million hectoliters, which it would be 850,000 U.S. barrels, BBL, in 1992. So definitely not a small company. Really, really cool. I mean, it's just so neat to see the passion that these Germans have for beer.
And just so you guys can understand the differences, if you don't know already, between beer and malt liquor, beer can be either top fermented or bottom fermented and typically has a lower alcohol content. Malt liquor is only bottom fermented and has a higher alcohol content than beer. So typically you'll see alcohol content anywhere between 7 to 12% ABV or alcohol by volume, whereas beer will typically be, you know, in the 3% to 3.5% range. So your standard beers, like, you know, in the US, think like Budweiser, Coors, will be 3 to 3.5%. And you have the craft breweries as well, but your malt liquors are classified by only being bottom fermented and having a higher alcohol content. And the comparison for Pilsner would be the vintage style, like Schlitz malt liquor. If you grew up in like the 80s, it was the can with the blue bull on it. And that's just, it was a staple. It was Schlitz malt liquor.
All right. So let's go ahead and give our Spaten Optimer a bit of a nose here.
Oh, that smells like dates. Like, it definitely has like a fruity, nutty smell to it.
It's got a rich and dark, it makes me think of a rich, dark, full-bodied flavor, pungent, mm-hmm. fruity.
Yep. And it smells less carbonated, if that's a thing. Like, if you can smell that, like, it doesn't feel it doesn't smell crisp at all. It smells very full-bodied, like you said.
When I think German beer, this is what I think.
Yeah.
Full-bodied, no nonsense, and like it's going to pretty much like knock you on your butt. Yeah,
and no bubbles. We're not talking like no fizzy, bubbly yes. stuff going on.
Yes, this is a man's beer for sure. All right, we ready?
I'm
Let's
ready.
Let's have a taste.
It's got it tastes has a very coffee undertone to it. Like very dark, very like roasty. Like you can almost feel like you can taste the roasted hops in it.
Yes. You know, that's a very, very good analogy there. It just tastes beautiful. I feel like if I defeated my enemies and I wanted to drink a beer from his skull, this is what I would drink.
Well, I mean, we are drinking this out of like Viking ale horns, so it feels like we've just conquered somebody in battle. But it also tastes flat, which is a good thing. It tastes like there's zero carbonation. Like, you know how when you think of Pilsner, you think of like, it's like, or a Corona or a Budweiser, it's very like fizzy.
Kind of refreshing.
Yeah, this is the opposite of refreshing. It's more like a meal. You know, like if you're eating a meal, this is what it would be. It's very filling.
It's big and satisfying.
Yes.
And it's not the type of satisfaction that you would expect to get out of a liquid.
Yep.
Like, I agree. It makes me feel like I'm eating and drinking.
If you were eating and drinking, you would not have to eat nearly as much. Because this would also kind of like fill you up as well.
It is such a wonderful flavor.
It is. It's a good beer.
It's a big beer. It's a very adult beer. This is not a little kid beer, okay? Man, I feel like if I was, you know, a soldier in the Middle Ages, I feel like this is what I would drink.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that it's cold. Because if it was warm, it would have a different flavor profile, which I think we may revisit this, maybe outside of the podcast, because this is enjoyable, but maybe not cold and see what that feels like, see what that tastes like.
Wow.
Like room temperature.
That's a really, really nice, nice bit there.
It Ooh. Is.
And it's good. Oh, we got a lot more drinking to do than normal, guys. Okay, so normally we're just tasting a little, you know, drink of scotch or, sake or something like that, or a bourbon. But boys and girls, we got some beer to drink here. We got to get some drinking done here.
Well, I can tell you it has the color of like a dark roast coffee. Like it is not light by any means. If just looking at it, I guess the easiest way to explain it is it looks like cold brew. Like if you've ever seen like cold brew coffee, that's what it looks like.
Well, I must say, the Beck's, while being very refreshing, this beer here makes me want to go, pillage a village. Like I feel like I just want to, go attack a village with an axe or a hammer or something. Is that normal? Are you supposed to feel that way?
No, but again, we're drinking out of Viking ale horns and we're drinking German beer. I believe we're getting instilled with the spirit of pillaging from these ancestors that are in these cups.
There's something going on. All right, I'm going to chase down our next one here.
So the interesting thing about beer is that it has a way of bringing people together socially. So even myself included, I'm not a very outgoing person. I'm introverted by nature. And I know that Eric, although he is the main talent on Iraq Veteran 8888, he's pretty introverted as well. But when you start getting some beer in you, it really kind of has a way of loosening up the gears, and it really lowers those inhibitions. And it makes it much easier to speak your mind. And you end up talking with people that you normally wouldn't talk with. So I wouldn't say that drinking in a social environment is a bad thing. If anything, I've had some of the best conversations and I've talked with people that I normally would never think about talking with normally.
Well, some drinks make you communicate with the Mayan gods, it seems, or at least want to. Some drinks make you want to, maybe beat the war drum a little bit, so we might slightly be getting into that territory. All right, we're going to move on to our next libation here. This is one of my favorites. I absolutely adore this beer. I've drank a lot of it over the years. It's my favorite German beer. Now, hopefully I'm presenting this without bias, but I really, really love this stuff. And when I want a German beer, this is my go-to beer. And that is Warsteiner Dunkel. All right, roasted barley malt. This stuff is so good. Oh my gosh, it's great. All right, and we're going to pull a couple of notes here from their website. Warsteiner Premium Dunkel, a rich dark amber beer with full-bodied, smooth taste, nicely accentuated with satisfying notes of roasted malt and subtle bottom fermenting yeast tones. Beautiful. Okay, quality hops. Hops composed due to the results of professional manual quality evaluation and elaborated analysis methods of hundreds of samples of fresh harvested batches of premium quality varieties from accepted best provenances so that it matches the profile demands for Warsteiner. That's a very German statement. That sounds like something a German would write.
It does sound like
And I don't mean that in a bad way. To keep this harvest fresh quality over the year, these selected batches are extracted after selection immediately with the help of pure carbon dioxide or alcohol, respectively, pelletized and vacuum packed. So these Germans do not take beer making lightly. All right, getting into the barley. Malt from selected and audited two-row spring barley of specified types and provenances. And this is like German to English, so there's always going to be a little bit of a loss in translation. And that's fine. Okay. Brewing water of an outstanding quality for Warsteiner, which is particularly characterized by its pureness and softness.
Water softness.
That is apparently a thing. Okay. This beer comes in at a whopping 4.8% alcohol by volume. So not the highest one of our flight so far, but
higher than average.
But higher than average, yeah. Higher than a Bud. You think Bud comes in like 3.8 or 3.6?
No, I think it's like 3 to 3.5%.
3%?
Yeah. Like it's fairly low. Because you gotta think these dudes are pounding like 12 pack, you know, and they're still walking. So it can't be that bad.
Absolutely. We'll get in a little bit to the history of the brewery of Warsteiner, but first, let's give this thing a nose and maybe give it a taste.
Before we do that, I think I read a news article somewhere that, I think it was yesterday, I forget which country it was, but I believe it might have been the Czech Republic, that the American troops depleted the entire beer stock of that country. Which is kind of interesting. They literally drank all the beer in the country.
I don't doubt it. That seems like something we would do.
Well, you have to think, there's a lot of different, in the military, there's a lot of different stations that even when you're going to train, you might go and do like a 2 or 3 week train up with another country. And there's nothing really to do there. So you go out and you hit the town. But I just thought that was pretty funny that they drank the entire stock of beer of that town. Hilarious.
Well, that's not quite out of line for what we do. Let's go ahead and give this Warsteiner Dunkel a little bit of a nose here. We've got a few more flights to do. And let's go ahead and get on number three here. Give it a little bit of a nose.
It was Iceland.
Iceland. Well, let's not say much.
Right. U.S. troops in Iceland, for the NATO's largest war games, drank all the beer in the capital city. Thousands of U.S. troops deployed to Iceland drank all the beer in the capital
city. Well, that's a nice Iceland. Big old glass of America right there.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's give it a nose.
Very barley-ish. Like you can definitely smell barley and hops.
Yeah, there's barley in play, but also a very, if I can say this and not sound like a weirdo, bold, but also delicate.
It is.
In the same sentence.
No, you're right, because that delicacy comes in on the tail. It's like right as it's kind of finishing off. It's very soft, very supple, you know?
I love this beer so much. Yeah, I'm about to enjoy this very much.
And I just kind of like sloshed it around in the ale horn, and it developed like this nice head. It's like a creamy consistency, almost like a Guinness.
The color of this beer is beautiful. It's very, very, you know, dark consistency. The bottle's a dark amber color. The labels are white, black, and brown. Relatively consistent. Commercial packaging you would expect for modern beer. Nothing about the bottle or the packaging jumps out at me as being extraordinary. The color's beautiful. I love it. All right, let's give it a taste, Matt. Oh, yeah. That's the stuff.
It's very good. Very, very good.
Oh, I see the wheels turning over
there. Yeah, it's actually quite complex. You know, I'm trying to break down all the different flavors.
Well, there's like, all right, so you've got that crispness of mm-hmm. the Beck's. You've got the complexity of the Spaten. It's kind of in the middle. It's crisp and refreshing, yet it's got a complexity, but not quite as far down the rabbit hole as the Spaten.
I was just thinking that because I was like, there, a part of me likes the Spaten, but I like this beer. But it's like, if I could mix the two together, it'd be perfect.
Man, this beer is fantastic.
Yeah, it is way more complex than the Spaten. It's just got so many moving parts on it.
It's got a lot going on, but I will say that it probably on the edge of refreshment, though. Mm-hmm. I feel that this beer is probably a little bit more refreshing than the Spaten. The Spaten is more of a Viking beer. Like, I feel like I want to go like overtake a small town or something with an axe or a hammer, but the Warsteiner makes me think of I'm celebrating.
I can see that. The Spaten makes me feel like I'm eating, like I have like a turkey leg, a giant turkey leg in one hand and a ale horn full of Spaten in the other hand. And you're just kind of like eating and drinking and being merry. And the Warsteiner is more like, I don't know, I'm in a pub with friends. And it's just a different, and that's the great thing about this is that we're sitting here drinking these beers and we're having completely different experiences with every single one.
Yeah, it makes me think about, you know, hanging out with good friends, good company, a hearth, fire, you know, cold outside.
It is kind of cold outside.
It paints a picture of celebration and camaraderie for me. I know that's hard to believe, but drinks can do that. And this one does. Mm. Oh, you got so much beer to drink. That is fantastic.
We might have to do half port on the next two.
Woo, son.
I'm getting extremely, extremely full. Beer takes up a lot of volume.
Noted. All right, we're going to go down the rabbit hole here.
So just to backtrack on that last statement, the official statement, 6,000 soldiers were in Reykjavik for the whopping time period of 4 days, and they depleted the entire beer supply. If that doesn't say something about the American military and the will to just hammer it out, I don't know what else will. Because there is no other force on this planet that will deplete a beer supply than the American military. So the next beer we have is going to be a Salvator Double Bock. So it's another dark lager from Paulner. And it's got a beautiful light brown, close to amber color consistency. And it comes in a very old world bottle. That bottle is reminiscent of something that you would honestly see probably in the 40s or the 50s. It's just a very old world bottle, stamped, pressed bottle. It's really cool. I mean, there is a fair amount of marketing, let's be honest, a fair amount of marketing that goes into any beverage, regardless of whether it's Coca-Cola or Pepsi or Coors or Anheuser-Busch or Paulaner München, which is the makers of Paulaner Salvator.
Yeah, I mean, this particular bottle, you've got a monk with a giant stein of beer, and he's handing it to a nobleman with a powdered wig. It's got this old world vibe to it, a beautiful red, black, and gold logo, very old world. The back of the logo has got this kind of wooden facade behind it. So it's a very classic and old school logo. All right. When it comes to Double Bock, no other beer can touch Paulaner Salvator's Double Bock. It is the industry standard and perfectly embodies this lager style that is often called liquid bread. Here we go. Yeah, buddy. Double Bock lager is brewed with Hercules Taurus and Hallertauer. I cannot pronounce these words to save my life.
They are in German.
Tradition hops using Munich and Pilsner malts. Available throughout the world, this legendary beer is one that every beer lover needs to try at least once. It can be definitively stated that you have not had Double Bock until you've tasted Salvator. Really cool. All right. Man, I feel a little intimidated. Like I don't know where to go here.
And just to remind our listeners, Double Bock is, quote, a very strong, very full-bodied lager that uses dark-colored malts. That's what a double Bock is. Not to be confused with the single Bock.
You got that bottle over there?
Huh? I do.
What's the alcohol percentage on this beer?
It is an 11.2-ounce beer, and it is 7.9% alcohol by volume.
So that's well over double a standard Budweiser. So this is definitely not a slouch of beer.
I would dare say that would be on the high gravity side. And for our listeners, you have your standard beers and then you have your high gravity beers. And a high gravity beer, and I want to make sure that I have this correct. So high gravity brewing is a term that refers to the process of preparing a type of strong wort with a high original gravity. And gravity is just it's not used in the sense of like Newton's apple gravity. It's more of a brewer's term of alcohol by volume. So ABV, a normal gravity wort is typically in the range of 10 to 13, Plato, and will result in a beer containing 4 to 6% alcohol by volume. So that is a standard gravity. So this is almost 8%. So that would put it in the realm of high gravity.
So this is definitely a stout beer in terms of alcohol content. And you know, the Germans, they really do look at flavor more than they do alcohol content. And the more bold and crazy the flavors, usually the higher the alcohol content. Before we nose this and give it a taste, I'd like to just give a bit of background about their brewery. Let's see. The Paulaner is known as one of the best breweries in Germany. It is only natural that this is home to one of the best beers in the world. Located in Munich, the Paulaner Brewery officially started in 1634, and Salvator has always been the flagship beer. The story goes that the Paulaner monks of the Nudic Monastery were, like many in their day, very skilled at making beer. Their Double Bock was famously served instead of food during Lent.
That makes sense.
Oh boy, here we go. And envied by commercial brewers in the area. The original Salvator recipe is still in use today, although a few refinements have been made over the years. Salvator has been revered as the king of Double Bocks through almost 4 centuries. Holy crap, 400 years. Though brewers continue to try to duplicate it, few have come close. And the brewery keeps its secrets very close to home. Even outside of its style, Salvatore is considered one of the best beers in the world, often making it onto the list of 50 best beers. So this has a lot. This is a lot of hype.
Let's try it out. I'm excited.
Let's give it a nose.
I did not know.
All right, let's see how it smells.
That it smells very robust, if I'm going to say that. It definitely smells more like a meal than a dessert, if that helps paint a picture.
It does. I feel like when I drink this, I'm going to grow more hair on my chest.
I feel like I'm going to turn into a Hessian.
I feel like I might convert to the monastery lifestyle.
I feel like I'm going to take a vow of silence for 1 year.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. All right, let's give this beautiful beer a taste.
Oh, that is lovely.
Oh my gosh,
that's so good. It's so good, guys. You don't understand. It is sweet and savory at the same time. So it's full bodied. It feels just like you said, like a meal that is sweet and savory, almost like a King's Hawaiian bread.
Okay. I'm following you.
Yeah, that's what I feel like.
It makes me think of this complex marriage of food in liquid form.
Yeah. If you could drink a King's Hawaiian bread, that's what that would be. Because it's very, like, very filling, very full, sweet, and savory.
And with a very distinctive and beautiful texture.
Yes. That's it.
I'm going to drink some more.
Yes.
We got a lot to drink, guys and girls.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no carbonation. It's flat. It's completely flat. Feel like you could... it's something about the beer, because when you... I feel like you could shake it up and nothing would happen, which is good. It's a good thing. You're not like getting like air bubbles and like... all that kind of stuff in there.
When the Declaration of Independence was signed and the Founding Fathers had a giant party, somehow I just kind of foresee them like drinking this.
Yeah.
This feels like a celebratory drink that you only break out in the most special of occasions.
They probably took it from the Hessians when they crossed the Delaware. You know, that...
it's very possible.
Yeah, that midnight raid.
I would wonder if those... Hessians brought some of their beer with them.
It's very interesting, because the way they conducted warfare in those days was very gentlemanly. Like, it's almost like they would allow them to bring barrels of their ale with them. And they were like, "I say, good fellow, you would never steal my ale. I surrender, but allow me to keep my ale.
But allow me to pour you a beverage."
That's right. That's right. That's how I imagine it. It's absolutely nuts to think of the difference in, like, the way that they conducted warfare back then was so gentlemanly. Like, it was crazy.
The notes of this beer in terms of the way it
smells. Dude, I finished mine.
I poured a lot more for me than you. I took your unused portion.
Well, I appreciate that, because I'm getting absolutely demolished right now.
Well, we only have one more beer, so we got to hold it together for the rest of the flight.
Okay. I think we'll...
a lot more liquid to drink. All right, so we only have a little bit more time. I'm going to go ahead and slam this beer and get it down here.
Woo. You know, I'll tell you a quick story about when I was in the Army. One of my squad leaders previously was stationed in Germany, and Germany is a fairly popular and local and large location for the U.S. Army to be stationed. They also have a very large Oktoberfest there in Germany. Well, it is so large, in fact, that they pull the beer trucks up to Oktoberfest. And just, if you ever seen those gas tankers when they're filling up gas stations, with the pipes that go from the tank directly into the gas-filled stores. That's what it's like at Oktoberfest. So they have these big tankers full of beer that have fire hose-like attachments that go straight to the stations where you're pouring the beer. Well, at the end of the evening, everybody closes down and everybody goes home. Well, a certain group of U.S. soldiers decided to loiter in the area, and they discovered that these tanker trucks don't have on and off valves. They're just there. And if you turn the valve, they will open and they will continue to let out their wonderful libations. So this group of American soldiers found this tanker truck, opened the valve, and proceeded to drink themselves into a stupor until discovered by the police and politely escorted back to base. Interesting story. And I find it very fun the way that it was explained. That it was just a bunch of GIs that happened to find a German truck full of beer and proceeded to drink all of it, as much as they humanly could, until discovered by the police.
That sounds very much like a very American.
Very outing. American, yes.
All right, so we're going to get into our last flight. I'll try to keep this one relatively quick because we are running close on time here.
And we're getting quite sloshed.
We are getting a little sloshed. However, I digress. We're going to move on. And unfortunately, I cannot pronounce the name of this beer. It is
Let me give it a go.
Crazy. Weihenstephaneritis? Well, oh my gosh, can you pronounce that? I can't. Hey, I think that the less that you can pronounce the name of a beer, the better it's going to taste.
Well, I would pronounce this as Weihenstephaner.
Well, that's what it is.
Yes. But I will point out that it is brewed under the purity law of 1516.
Alcohol content of 7.7%, so definitely not a lightweight. This one scores 86. All right. Let's see. Our light-colored spicy single bock, so not a double bock, a single bock. Vitus is saturated with fine yeast and a creamy foam.
Mmm.
It is a specialty with a round character based on the extra long storage time. The fruity smell of dried apricots joins aromas of citrus, cloves, and hints of banana. Full-bodied and sparkling with an effervescence mouthfeel, that's what it says. Thus, the Vitus does not taste like a typical bock beer, but more like a noble, fruity wheat beer. Perfect with red meat, strong cheese, and also able to guide desserts. Brewed according to our centuries-old brewing traditions, the purity law, that German.
Yep, 1516 purity law.
So, all right, we are running close on time. Let's go ahead and give it a smell.
Its
color is kind of, you know, a typical sort of light gold pilsner sort of color.
I will say that this one smells very wheaty. And if you ever think about, if you're questioning what I mean by wheaty, if you haven't had the opportunity, or if you're familiar with Hoegaarden, which is a beer, it's a very like white Belgian style of beer. It's a wheat based beer. It smells like that. It smells like a Hoegaarden.
Yeah, or even like Blue Moon.
Yeah, Blue Moon is a Belgian wheat type. But that's what it reminds me of. It smells like that.
It's got a very almost carbonated and mm-hmm. crisp type of smell to it.
Yeah, the complete opposite of the previous three beers, yep. which have been very flat and very
bold. Yeah, this is more refreshing. This makes me think of a beer one would drink out fishing or in the outdoors hanging out. Mm-hmm. This probably, out of all the beers we've had so far, makes me think more of the Beck's.
Mm, yeah.
So
this might be a dark beer that you could drink at the pool. based on what the smell is.
Let's give it a taste. Much more carbonation.
That's a Belgian wheat, man.
Yeah, that kind of crispness.
Yes, that tastes just like a Hoegaarden.
It certainly does.
Wow. So it smells exactly, gave it away. Like I smelled it and I was like, man, that smells exactly like a Hoegaarden. So let me just.
Yeah.
It is. It's a Weizenbach. Yeah. That's why. Okay.
Yeah, it's very crisp.
Yep.
It's very fruity and fragrant. And it's got a loftiness to it.
Yep.
It's definitely not bold and Viking-like, if that's a good term.
No, but
it is good.
It is a different classification of beer. So, while it is like a single bock and a double bock, this is a Weizenbach, which is a wheat beer. So it does fall into the classification of. You know, the same thing as, like, say, a Hoegaarden or a Blue Moon style of beer.
Totally gets into the same territory.
Yes.
So, you know, in future podcasts, what we're going to probably, wind up doing, you know, we're going to, you know, jump into some of the beers and libations of various, countries and different areas and regions. We really do enjoy doing this type of stuff. So today we tried to kind of bounce around Germany a bit. Ooh, excuse me. I've had quite a bit to drink.
Oh, yes.
We've been but
day drinking, man. All day.
Oh, yeah. Definitely day drinking. But we're going to get into some other interesting territory, and we'll try to approach some of the beers from around the world, from various countries. I'm going to work on putting that together, and some of the future flights will definitely get into that. Guys, we hope you enjoyed it. I love German beer. It has a bold flavor. The history is definitely fascinating. Lots and lots of long-standing tradition goes into making German beer, and they should definitely be proud of what they produce because it is just absolutely beautiful. The flavor is out of this world. If you've never had a chance to drink a German beer, you should definitely do it. They are wonderful. All right. Wunderbar.
Well, I will tell you, this is a great way to end the week, and thank you, Eric. You've been such a great host having me over, and I appreciate it. Cheers, brother.
Cheers. All right. Guys, we'll see you next Friday. Make sure you tune in each week. Please leave us a great review, comment, all of that good stuff. It helps us show up in the search results a lot better. So thank you so much. Guys, every Friday here on Life, Liberty, and Pursuit, go in freedom, go in liberty. Have a great week, and we will see you on the flip side next Friday.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Life, Liberty, and Pursuit. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. You can support us over on Ballistic Inc. by picking yourself up some merch. And remember, guys, dangerous freedom. Have a good one.